Yeah. Ah, NBA Australia. How you going? That's right. You going crazy in lockdown? Jesus. Reckon I am. It is NBA Australia. It is Wednesday. Hump day, April 8th. It's not really hump day when none of the fucking days have any meaning. Yeah, anyway. I'm your host, James Clements. I'm a writer sometimes for Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, and whoever else wants to pay me that sweet, sweet folding stuff. Here, ensconced in a very dirty Larayama Studios. Because old mate has been working from home and has made a mockery of Larayama Studios. There is shit everywhere. Maltesers, cups of coffee. Pull yourself together, woman. Anyway, look, we'd usually be breaking down all the NBA, but there's no NBA because it's fuck it Wednesday. The NBA season is still suspended. The coronavirus is running rampant. Hope you're staying safe. But we're still doing a weekly show, so why not? And today, we've got a real fucking treat for you. It's awesome. We've got none other than the legend himself, D-Mac. That's right, Daryl McDonald, Mr. Excitement, D-Mac. North Melbourne Giant, Melbourne Tiger, Victoria Titan, legend. It's awesome. We chat about his amazing career in the NBL, bit of yeah nahs with him. We talk about coaching, talk about Brett Brown, Brian Goorjian, the best players he played with and against and stuff. It's really, really fun. D-Mac is amazing. So with that in mind, we're going to jump back in the NBA Australia time machine as well. Head to April 8, 1994. Same year that D-Mac was lighting up the NBL. And we'll also take a look at the top five best player YouTube highlight clips. Oh, yeah. Nice. And that'll be it, because there's not much else to talk about because the entire world is shut down. But it's all good. We're also going to finish up with a deli review of Tiger King. You better believe it's wild. All right. Let's get into it. It's NBA Stray episode 432. Let's go.
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack!
Oh, you better. Actually, you kind of better, because we're going to talk about Shaq a little bit later. We're going to talk about young Shaq. Oh, yeah. Good times. Somebody got Shaq attacked. Look, we're going to start today's show the way we start every show here, with the daily whip around. That's right. Oh, Jesus, that was loud. Nice. All right. There's an extra big whip because Bulls, the Chicago Bulls, they've finally done something right. You might remember, what was it, last week before, talking about how they were finally biting the bullet and going, oh, yeah. So these morons in charge, who have been in charge for like, you know, 18 years and have delivered us exactly zero finals spots and basically squandered a whole bunch of time and draft picks, etc. Maybe this isn't working out and they're looking for new head honchos. Ideally, though, they were going to come in above the existing partnership of Gar Foreman and John Paxson. And anybody who's got half a fucking brain was like, yeah, that's going to be fucked. The Bulls were looking to move Gar Pax to different parts of the organization. And it turns out now that the Pax part of Gar Pax, John Paxson, is firing himself. Yep. Leaving the organization. But Arturis Karnisovas, it looks like the lead candidate at the moment, which is pretty crazy because after Brooklyn made a pretty big run at him a couple of years ago, Denver really upped the ante. He's gotten paid a lot more. It's going to be interesting to see if Chicago really dip into their pockets and get someone like Karnisovas. Which I think would be smart. I think Denver's been really well built. There's still some weird stuff, but I mean, Denver are sitting there with the Nikola Jokic. Hello. They've been really smart, I think, with the way that they've gone about some of their contracts with Will the Thrill Barton, Paul Thrillsap. I mean, opting into his $30 million this year was a no-brainer just because there was no reason not to, etc. And their young dudes, I mean, Gary Harris, the Dartsman's really the only sort of hiccup, and even he's not on a giant contract. So kind of like that. But yeah, good job, Bulls. About time. The NBA in general news. Commissioner Adam Silver. That's right. The man who looks like one of those hairless cats mixed with an alien. He said this week that the NBA will not be making any decisions about anything until at least May. Which makes sense because no one's got any fucking clue about what's going on. But the NBA are looking at quick testing which should turn around, you know, testing results much quicker. And then there's the idea that they may indeed relocate the rest of the season slash playoffs, etc., to somewhere like Vegas, where they can quarantine off, you know, large sections of a city and have specific arenas and whatnot to play games in. Basically, you know, if you're going to play without crowds, then, and if you're going to sequester every team in place, then A, why the fuck not Vegas? Jeez. Make for great stories, if nothing else. And B, look, there's not going to be any fucking tourists, so may as well. But the thing is, there's going to be an interesting sort of idea as the US sports specifically, and obviously the AFL, NRL, etc., all slowly inch towards maybe trying to figure out how to come back when it's sort of safe for the players and coaches and associated staffs of all the teams. It's not really clear as to, you know, right, you got 1,500 people, say, in like a very smallish kind of area. What happens when one of those out of nowhere tests positive for the coronavirus, you know? It's going to be fascinating. But look, keep an eye on that and I'll keep you updated, obviously. The draft, that's right. Bit of draft news. Don't forget about the draft. You know, amongst all of this, the fact that we don't know if the regular season's done or not, I'm pretty sure it'll be Dunskies. I reckon they'll just go straight in the playoffs. But anyway, one of my favorite, it's like, what is it? I rank it, was it three? Maybe second. My second favorite NBA night is lottery night. Draft night's probably my favorite. And then third favorite's probably the first day of the season. Yeah. Anyway, look, it's awesome. Draft night, draft lottery night is great. But look, who knows when the fuck that's going to happen. Turns out, though, the NBA have told teams that they're actually not allowed to do in-person workouts, obviously, or interviews, but they are allowed to have virtual interviews with the prospects. They're limited to 4 hours total, though, for each team. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I kind of like this because without the people have asked me, like, you know, what do you reckon about the actual draft? I'm like, well, a lot of people don't make too many decisions until after, obviously, the NCAA tournament, and without that this year, means there's going to be a lot of fucking dumb picks in the draft this year. But it also maybe doesn't sort of sway you one way or the other, you know? Maybe the tape is the tape and that's all you've got. You don't get caught up in the excitement and momentum of something like the NCAA tournament. Interesting, right? Anyway. And finally, the Hall of Fame. Absolutely fine. Fantastic. Incredible. One of the all-time greatest Hall of Fame classes. Kobe, Duncan, Garnett. They're all done. They're going to be inducted August 29 to the Basketball Hall of Fame, which is great. They're joined by Tamika Catchings, Kim Mulkey, she's a coach of Baylor, Barbara Stevens of Bentley, Eddie Sutton, he's a good coach, and Rudy Tomjanovich, which is pretty cool. So good on them. Yeah. Good on yous. That's pretty great. But what a headlining class, right? Tamika Catchings, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett. Unbelievable stuff. Also, doesn't it feel like it was fucking 87 years ago that Kobe passed away? Fuck, man. That is crazy. All right. Sweet. What are we going to do? What do we do at the moment? Well, we go in the time machine. That's what we do. So how about before we go to talk to D-Mac, we're going to go to 1994 anyway. And I'm going to jump in the time machine. It's going to be pretty cool. Now, let's see if I can figure out the board. Now, you might have been laughing at my board inabilities last week, but that's because it was, you know, freaking out of me a little bit when I was chatting to old mate Carson over there. But let's jump in the time machine anyway and go back to April 8, 1994. Ah, nice one. That actually kind of worked. All right, let's do it. It's NBA Australia. It is April 8, 1994. I guess. We had 9 games on this day, 1994. Weird year. Weird year, which is, look, I picked 1994 because it was the first year the D-Mac played in the NBL, but also just because it was a really strange year. Obviously, Houston win the title. And if you look at the standings on this day, the number one seeds are the Knicks and the Rockets, the two teams that go through and obviously make the NBA Finals, the Rockets beating the Knicks during the OJ car chase, etc. Wild scenes, awesome stuff, but also a really crazy year because you've got Shaq, you've got Alonzo Mourning coming in, you've got Chris Webber in the Penny Hardaway rookie class, you've got Sean Kemp and Gary Payton just before their heartbreaking playoff exit in the first round that broke my heart back in 1994. But, right, let's wrap up some games, shall we? Boston beat Minnesota 112-108. Christian Laettner absolutely fucking shredded for Minnesota. And look, you do get caught up in, oh, it was a bit of a disappointing pro, etc. But Laettner, he could fucking ball. He had 28-6 in this game, shot 11 of 16. But the weird thing for the Boston Celtics was that they were led by Robert Parrish. Old-ass Robert Parrish at 19-12. I mean, this is 1994 Robert Parrish. He'd been in the fucking league 15 years at this point. It's pretty crazy. But D. Brown at 26-9. Fucking love D. Brown. And Xavier McDaniel, X-Man. Love Xavier McDaniel at 17-2. Not a great year for the Wolves. They were 20-53 at this point. Not a great year for the Celtics either. Coming off the loss of Kevin McHale and Larry Bird and co, they were 27-46. Jesus. But they did have Dino Raja, who I fucking loved. Had a lot of Dino Raja cards in my time. Yeah, pretty crazy. But anyway, Charlotte beat the New Jersey Nets. Hello. That's right. This is the, don't forget, this is the Alonzo Mourning, Larry Johnson, Muggs Bogues, Hersey Hawkins, Charlotte Hornets. They were awesome. They weren't that great this year, though. 34-39. Zoe had 19-7 in this game. The Nets had Kenny Anderson, Derek Coleman, Benoit Benjamin, don't forget. Also good. Horrible, horrible game. 99-78, they lose. They were the better team. They were 39-35. Hornets were 34-39. But pretty weird. Just horrible shooting. They shot 34% as a team to the Nets. And we're going to have a couple of those guys pop up again later. But not great. But Larry Johnson, Lonzo Mourning, Muggsy Bogues, one of the all-time teams. And, you know, hilariously enough, also ties in with D-Mac. Basically had the North Melbourne Giants color scheme. Chicago beat Indy. This is the post-MJ, the first time post-MJ Bulls. Beat the Pacers 194. That's right. Scottie Pippen at 21-7-7 with 8 steals. Jesus, big Lucian Longley, Australian player watch. 2 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and 6 fouls in 17 minutes. Jesus, Lucian. Not bad, but Horace Grant with the Foggles, 19-14. Pretty great game for him. The Pacers, Reggie Miller, 4 of 11 shooting, 15 points. Rick Schmitz, hello, I'm very, very nice to meet you. I'm Rick Schmitz. 25 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. He was a gun, don't ever forget that. Heywood Workman worked him over, 15-10. Love me some Heywood Workman. But yeah, when Reggie's not going off, the Pacers at this point didn't really have it. They were 39-35. The Bulls were still 50-24, led by Scottie Pippen in an amazing bounce-back year for the Bulls without MJ. Crazy stuff. They were still basically like right in the thick of things, right? They were 50-24. That's basically the third best record in the East and I think the sixth best record overall. So pretty crazy. Denver beat the Lakers. This is the, obviously, the Dikembe era Nuggets. 112-99. Dikembe had 15-15 with 5 blocks. Jesus. Alfonso Ellis had 11 points, 10 rebounds. The Lakers, this is the Nick Van Sexel era. He had 10-10. Vlade had 33 points and 9 rebounds. Jesus. And big game, James Worthy, still there, still coming off the bench. 21-10 assists for him in this game. But the Lakers are obviously on the downswing at this point, 33-40. The Nuggets, 37-36. Robert Pack. Love me some Robert Pack. He had 19 points, 6 assists, 21 points for Rodney Rogers as well. Weird forgotten, sort of, not really forgotten because they end up, you know, upsetting my beloved Seattle Supersonics in the first round there. The first 1v8 upset ever. Ugh, brutally, brutally hurts my heart. But anyway, crazy team, fun team. Good stuff. Detroit lost to Orlando, 117-103. I mentioned this. Better watch out for the pain because young Shaq absolutely fucking torched the Pistons. But don't forget, this was the Pistons team that still had Isaiah Thomas. He had 11 points just before he called it quits. Joe Dumars had 12 points, 28 points, 15 rebounds for Terry Mills. This Pistons team had a young Allen Houston coming off the bench. He had 14 points, but this team was not great. Yeah. They were 20-53. Just before they go and, get a bit of Grant Hill action. You know what I'm saying? Orlando, meanwhile, were on the up and up. 40-16 for Shaq. 26-9-9 for Penny. 18 for Nick Anderson before he ruined his career. The year later. Yeah, crazy. All right, so there you go. Orlando, 117-103, beat Detroit. Good stuff. Philly beat New York, 197. Crazy game. Because you have basically Charles Oakley getting 18-18. No Patrick Ewing in this game, though. They're just like, yeah, you're fine. Greg Anthony, 16-8. But man, the Sixers, which is like nobody on this team. 26 points, 10 rebounds for Clarence Weatherspoon. 18 for Orlando Woolridge off the bench. Somehow get a win. They were 23-51 at this point, beating the 52-21 New York Knickerbockers of New York City. Crazy, man. Sacramento beat Phoenix 104-101. Mitch Richmond lit it up for 33 points. Gets the win by three. Pretty good. You'll take that. Barkley, though, 30-16-7. Kevin Johnson, KJ, 27 points, 8 assists. Thunder Dan Marley, 14 points. But Mitch leads all scorers with the 33. He was unreal. That's incredible to remember. Mitch Richmond, one of the best shooters of that era, went 1 of 2 from downtown. The entire team of the Sacramento Kings took 4 threes in this game. Woo! Spud Webb, yeah, 18 points, 13 rebounds. Pretty cool. But there you go. The Kings, 25-49. Again, same as the Knicks game. It's the end of the season. People are just like, ah, we're going to slow it down. We're going to make the playoffs. We're fine. And then they shit the bed against bad teams. So Kings, 25-49. Flip it around, 49-25 with the Suns. Kings get a win out of nowhere. Seattle, my beloved Seattle Supersonics, just before they shit the bed against the aforementioned Denver Nuggets, beat the historically bad Dallas Mavericks, 111-93. This is the Jim Jackson, Jamal Mashburn before Jason Kidd Mavs. Don't forget that. Jamal Mashburn at 27 in this, 10 points, 4 rebounds for Jim Jackson. Seattle, Payton at 22-7-4 steals. Sean Kemp, the Rain Man, 15 points, 13 rebounds. Awesome. And Detlef. Hello, I'm Detlef. 19 points. Love me some Detlef Schrempf. He's going through his do yourself a mohawk challenge at the moment, which is great. Anyway, love this Seattle team. They are unbelievable. So bloody good. And then they shit the bed in the first round of the playoffs. Still kills me to this day. Who knows what would have happened after that in the playoffs. And then finally, Cleveland. That's right, Stephen A. Smith.
Cleveland!
Beat Washington. No, lost to Washington. 108-98. Jesus. Rex Chapman, star of Twitter, led the way, which is pretty crazy to think about for the Bullets. 108. He had 29 points. Unbelievable. Don McLean, not American Pie Don McLean, but the other one, 26-12 for him. Kenny Skywalker played on this team. 9-11. Good on him. But not much else really going on. Who was on the Cavs at this point? Bobby Phils, Terrell Brandon, Hot Rod Williams. Man. The fact that his name is literally Hot Rod Williams, basketball reference, is still amazing. It's like his name's John, but he's literally listed as Hot Rod Williams. That is so fucking cool. Anyway, Gerald Wilkins, Gerald the Lesser Wilkins, not Dominique. Yeah, 21, but yeah, there you go. Tough scenes, really, though, for Cleveland and Washington. Cleveland at this point, not looking great. 42-33. We're going to make the playoffs, but we're going to get their asses beat, which was a bit of a shame. And Washington at the same time, we're 22-52. And yeah, it's going to be a bit of rough sledding for them. Mark Price, though, was still on the Cavs at this point, coming off the bench. Probably, you know, coming back from an injury as per usual. Anyway, all right, with all this in mind, 9 games done, April 8, 1994. Who's the NBA Australia approved performance of the night? What do you reckon? Oh, it's a pretty easy one for me.
That's not that nice. That's annoying.
Mate, we could give this a couple of TNT guys. Barkley, I mentioned that. 30 points, 16 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal and a block. He wasn't always just a funny guy on TV. He fucking won the MVP the year before. He was incredible. But Shaq, unbelievable in this game against the Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars Pistons. 40 points, 16 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 blocks, 14 of 22 from the floor. And how's this? Don't ever forget that young Shaq was a fucking gun. 12 of 12 from the free throw line. Before he got in his head. Pretty incredible. Never forget that young Shaq was an absolutely unstoppable force of fucking nature. God damn, that's good. Spud of the night.
Spud, 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 it is spud of the night.
Spud of the night. I mentioned the Charlotte Hornets, New Jersey Nets game. Kenny Anderson. I love me some Kenny Anderson growing up. 2 of 14 shooting this game, though. PJ Brown, 2 of 8. So basically, this is all of the Nets. 2 of 8 for PJ Brown. 1 of 8 for Armand Gilliam. 0 of 4 shooting for Jason Williams. 0 of 5 for Rick Mahorn. And Dave Jameson, 0 of 2. Jesus. That is horrible shooting for this entire, like basically the entire Nets team. Derek Coleman did show up. He went 7-11. Kevin Edwards went 3 of 9. Jesus, brutal. So yeah, most of that Nets team, they were, you know, pretty bloody okay. 39-35. On their way to the playoffs, I guess. It's like, oh geez. We've all completely fucking forgotten how to shoot. That is brutal. Yeah, they made the playoffs that year. Crazy. So there you go. Lots of spuds. Better than Lonzo Ball. This one's easy too.
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you're going to get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros. Now I can be average. You're coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody. Penny fucking Hardaway. Wow. The number 3 pick in that year's draft. Don't forget. Absolutely insane game. You do forget that Penny and Shaq in Orlando, they go to the finals the next year. 9 of 16 shooting for Penny, 26 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals and a block. Absolutely destroys the Pistons for the Magic. Just incredible, incredible. They basically what? Cruise along. They lose in the first round though against the Pacers. This unfortunate Orlando team. And you're like, oh, here we go. Pacers out of nowhere, smoke them in the first round. Tough scenes. Tough scenes. Absolutely tough scenes. You know? It's like, come on, man. What are we doing? Penny, he's a rookie. Shaq's in his second year. You got Dennis Scott. You got Scott Skiles. And they go 0-3 in the first round against the Pacers. Yeah, bit of a disappointment. Yeah, tough, tough, tough stuff. All right, finally, it is top 5 season, so let's do that, shall we? We've got a bit of an intro, because we're just going to go fucking ham. Top 5 season! Yeah, top 5 season. We've got the top 5 player YouTube highlights. Basically, this is a player who you go on YouTube and just look up their career highlights, or at least the highlights of them specifically for a bit. This is an easy one. Honorable mentions, Allen Iverson. Anytime you can lead off a highlight clip with basically someone crossing over MJ, damn. I mentioned him earlier, actually. Nick Van Exel, incredible. Incredible YouTube highlight clips. Alonzo Mourning has some great ones too. He has an insane game in the 94 playoffs where he just goes hammer and tongs and he's incredible. For Charlotte, or maybe 95 playoffs. I can't remember which one, but yeah. Great stuff. Luke Longley, his 16 points in a half. That popped off a couple of weeks ago. So go check that one out. But anyway, number 5, Vince Carter. I mean, it kind of, he's the human highlight reel after Neek, isn't he? He's half man, half amazing. So good stuff, Vince Carter. Number 4 is Jason Williams, White Chocolate. Yep. I mean, the stuff that he did, it's just, it's literally built for YouTube. You basically sit there, you watch Jason Williams, and you clap delightedly with some of the shit he does. Number 3, I mentioned this, Orlando Shaq. It's just a nice one to be, you know, remind yourself every so often and go, oh, shit. That dude was a fucker boost. Number 2, Michael Jordan dunks. Michael Jordan passes. Michael Jordan steals. Michael Jordan MJ iconic moments. Literally anything you want to, like, Google or YouTube with MJ in it, you're going to be a winner. And number 1, Sean Kemp. Sean Kemp has the single greatest YouTube highlight reel of anybody. It basically runs and you're like just falling out of your fucking chair. Like if you go to the top 10 highlights, you just like, dude, are you fucking serious? Ah, the Gatling dunk. Oh, God, it kills me. And yeah, honorable mentions. I mean, there are dudes like Dominic Wilkins, but unfortunately, you just don't have high-res enough versions of a lot of the stuff. Whereas at least in the 90s, with Orlando, Shaq, Sean Kemp, into the thousands with Williams and Vince Carter, you do get better-looking stuff, so go check that out. All right, we could also do a quick little Patty Mills Game Day Ball Game Day Twitter check-in, because Patty is still lighting up Twitter, which is pretty great. He says, over the last 3 weeks, the NBA has been shut down. The physical workload is nowhere near what we used to do during this time. We've gone from daily practice games, weight training, cardio recovery, to creative home workouts in the backyard. While some change is good, Basically, the situation is an important reminder to maintain healthy living habits, not just for me, but for everybody. Here's some of the tips I've been implementing. And then he just has a nice little thread. And Ben Simmons. Big ups to Big Simo Ben Simmons over there. Doing great stuff with Philly Stand Up and the Philly Pledge, which is basically helping to find Philly local nonprofits who are doing amazing work, basically trying to help the fight against COVID-19. So Simo is going hard for the Philly Pledge, and it's absolutely fantastic. They're, you know, basically taking donations, and they're raising lots and lots and lots of money to help out health workers in Philly. So great stuff, Simo. Great stuff, Patty. Always legendary. All right, and now let's go to our big old chat with the absolutely amazing. This is really, really fun. So enjoy the shit out of this. Daryl McDonald, a.k.a. D-Mac, Mr. Excitement. It is legendary right after this one.
This is Mitch Creek, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, we were just talking about 1994, which actually works out pretty great. It's almost like I planned it. I didn't plan it. But anyway, it figures because that's when our next guest debuted in the NBL because he's three-time NBL champion, the bloke who's played longer than basically anyone ever. I don't know if that makes him our Kareem or our Vince Carter. What was it, 16 years, D-Mac? How's it sound? Is that right?
Yeah, 15 seasons.
There you go. Seasons. He's pretty much timeless. It's bloody D-Mac, Mr. Excitement, Daryl McDonald. D-Mac, how are you going?
I'm all right. Just hanging in with, you know, with this virus thing. So yeah, I'm good. Just self-isolating as much as possible, going out when I need to. But yeah, otherwise trying to do a little bit of exercise at home, and yeah, I'm okay.
Nice one. Do you have like a hoop set up somewhere at the house so you can sort of just go out there and just wow yourself every so often?
Nah. I used to, but not in these days. Definitely not.
Nice. I mean, so what have you been up to since you retired from the NBL? It seems like yesterday I feel like I was seeing you as a little kid play for the North Melbourne Giants, and then throughout the thousands you're on the Tigers, and then you were like, the sort of everlasting presence in the NBL for basically my entire generation. I mean, what have you been up to since 2008?
Coaching, really. You know, once I retired, I actually stopped playing. I played a little domestic on Thursday nights with Matt Shanahan and, you know, Paul Maley and some of the Pat Reedy, Darryl Pierce, some of our old North Melbourne Giants guys. I used to play on Thursdays with them. But then both of my Achilles started hurting after every game, so I gave that up. So I just stopped playing. But I've been coaching, like, you know, just, you know, juniors and, you know, coached out at Hawthorne. I coach at Wesley College, which I, you know, still coach at Wesley to this day. You know, I coached NBL. So I coached an NBL, coached the Tigers for 10 games. Also, you know, was assistant coach for years with Al Westover. I was assistant coach with Chris Anstey. Then became the head coach of the Melbourne United in their first year. Didn't get retained after that, and you know, just been again, just coaching. So I got a, you know, Matt, you know, one of my best friends, gave me a call. He was at Knox, you know, asked me to come down there, and yeah, I've been there ever since. So, you know, just got coached at Knox, coached in the Big V for 4 years. Still doing Wesley at the time. Didn't really coach no junior teams when I was at Knox. Just coached the senior men's and. Not doing that no more. But I'm still at Knox. You know, I'm just a junior boys coordinator. And I run a morning program. I do that every day, or Monday through Thursday. And yeah, just, you know, involved in the juniors a fair bit out at Knox. Again, still at Wesley. You know, I did Temple Stowe College for a little while when you know, with Stacker, because Stacker was doing the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. So every time he did the Phoenix, I was at Temple Stowe. You know, it's coaching, it's all experience. You know what I mean? Anytime I can help kids get better, that's the main thing I'm about right now, is just helping some of these young kids get better and developing the game.
That's, you know, awesome.
That's, yeah, that's really the main thing for me right now. You know, I have coaching opportunities. Like I said, I'm not doing the seniors no more, but still involved with some of their players. And, yeah, like I still love to coach, still would love to get back in NBL. You know, I still think I got a fair bit to offer. You know, I'm still involved in and what's going on in the NBL, with, you know, with players and, you know, the way the game is being played. And I think I can, you know, I still think I can help somebody. You know, that's the main thing.
Do the juniors, like, have a concept of, like, who you are? Like, do they actually bring up some of your highlights? Or they go, oh, shit, it's actually D-Mac. This is pretty crazy.
Very, not a lot of them.
It is a while now, right?
It is. It's a long time. I think it's more the parents. Well, a fair bit of the parents know. And I think they tell them, and they still like, you know what I mean? That, because I'm here. Like, I'm not an NBA. You know, the NBA is really big with the young kids these days. You know what I mean? But you get a few of them that go to the NBL games now, and they, you know, I see them. I went to see the Melbourne United last night. It was a good game. You know, I went to see the Phoenix, and I said, yeah, I said, go. Like, you know, those. Good, it's good to see. Like, it's good to watch, and you know, for those guys to go be able to actually be able to go watch those games is good. It's just good for Australia.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, NBA is the NBA, but you know, we need all the support. You know, NBL is on the rise, and we need all the support we can get, especially from the young ones.
Definitely. After you finish playing pro ball and like playing all the time, as you mentioned, you sort of stopped playing once you retired. Did you find any other sort of passions or hobbies after you retired? Like, did you take up fishing or golf or anything like that?
No. It was just, you know, it's crazy. Even after I retired, it's just been, it's still basketball, man. Like, yep. I just, you know, I don't really, like, when you say play, like, I don't play no other sport. Like, but I love to watch, you know, I'm an NFL guy. Like, I love to watch gridiron in the States and you know, and things like that. I watch college basketball. You know, I don't watch a lot of college football, but it's still basketball, man. And it's always been, like, even after I retired, like, I was actually going to play again. Because Joey, it's funny, I was walking my dogs, and I get a call from Joey Wright.
Yep.
And he said, dude, are you retired? I said, well... He said, are you really retired? And I said, well, yeah, why? You know what I mean? Like why? He said, well, I want you to come out of retirement and come up to Brisbane and play with me. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. So, you know, we organized, we had a chat. I was on a flight. You know, I think I was on a week later. I went up to meet him to see him and, you know, the owner and the general manager sat down, had dinner. Yeah, this is what we're going to do, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, I get a call from Joey saying it's not going to happen.
Ooh.
And I think after that, that was the time for me. You know, that was really it for me. I think that was saying, dude, you might need to let it go. And that was it. And then, yeah, no, I haven't taken up no hobbies. It's still basketball all day, every day for me.
At least, I mean, retiring would have meant that you would have been able to watch a lot more NFL, right? Like, your Monday morning sort of would have been a lot more free. You know, sit down, watch some of the games from over here.
Yeah, you know what, though? I maybe later on in my career, Al Westover, playing for Al was pretty, you know, at the Tigers was really, like, he was pretty good with me. Like, he gave me a fair bit of leeway, you know what I mean? I never tried. Like, Wednesdays was my day off, and, you know, if I didn't show up on Mondays, I think he had a, you know, I'll call in with a headache and things like that. He actually knew why I was home because probably my Cowboys, because I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. My Cowboys was probably playing, so I just didn't go to training. But he was cool with it. Like, he was like, dude, I know exactly why you wasn't here. But he gave me a little bit of leeway, which was pretty cool. It's easy now, though. You know what I mean? I tape, you know, all the games come on, I tape them. You know, either I watch them at the time or I watch them later. But yeah. I pretty much get into it.
Yeah, I found the best way to go about it is with NFL League Pass, basically the NBA League Pass. I can't remember the name of the NFL one, but
that's it. It's pretty much Game Pass.
Game Pass. That's right. Having that on my iPad and then chucking that on front of the treadmill is one of the best ways to watch a bunch of games.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. All right, back to the start of your journey. You know, all the way to Australia. You grew up in Harlem. You're basically a playground legend. You get recruited by Shelby Metcalf to go to the Aggies, Texas A&M. What was that transition like at that point of your life to go from New York all the way to Texas? Like, that must have been pretty crazy, right?
Yeah. I mean, no, it was. Like, again, but, you know, you started playing street ball. And, you know, I got an opportunity to go because I wasn't in school at the time.
Yep.
And I had just got my diploma. So I just got my high school diploma. It's called a GED. I had just got that. And this guy saw me playing. And he was like, "Are you in school?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "Do you want to go back?" And I was like, "Sure." So I ended up, you know, I ended up going to community college, Westchester Community College for 2 years. You know, made All-American. And it's funny, you know, even playing against, you know, I had an opportunity. We played against Ricky Grace. So I played against Ricky Grace. And
awesome.
In a junior college all-star game. And people, you know, a lot of people didn't know that. Eddie Cox is another one. I don't know if you know Eddie, but he's been in Australia for a long time. He was also in that game. You know, Mitch Richmond was in that game. And, you know, I had the opportunity to play in that. And then, you know, I get it, you know, we in school, and then Shelby, well, I get the, you know, I get a, oh, my coach from JUCO, Ralph Arrieta, you know, calls me in, comes in the office, and he said, "Dude, you know, Texas A&M is recruiting you. They want to bring you down for a visit." And it was me and another guy at my school named Jimmy McGee. So we both went down there together. And, you know, it was interesting because I got down there, and I'm in Texas, and I've never been to Texas. So, you know, down there, and, you know, we driving. And, you know, I see a big shotgun on the back of a truck, and I'm like, "What's going on here?" You know what I mean? But then you almost see it all the time in Texas. Like, because I think people do it, you know, people go hunting, people do a lot of hunting. You know what I mean? And then we did the visit. You know, I went and watched them train, and I went to a college football game. That was pretty awesome. And then I pretty much signed on it because I signed in the early signing period. Like, I didn't even wait because you get two. I mean, you get, you know, there was one in April. I didn't even wait for that. I did the one in was it November? I think it might have been early November. And I signed with Texas A&M straight away. I didn't even wait.
Amazing.
So, you know, it was a great, good, you know, it's a good opportunity. I got an opportunity to go to college. And then I actually had to go to JUCO. I had to go to summer school before I can actually play. So I left New York. Went to summer school in July. You know, I can't even remember where I was at, but it was, you know, some part, it was a part of Texas. You know, I went to summer school, I was there for about 6 weeks past that. And then, you know, went back to New York, finished up the summer. And then before I know it, I was on the plane back to A&M.
You actually made an NCAA tournament as well, right?
Yeah, my first year we did, but I actually got injured. You know what I mean? Like my first year at A&M, I got injured and did my knee. You know, did my knee, like my knee went in on me, and I had to miss. You know, I missed a fair bit early, and it's funny though because you get over there, and it became a bit frustrating. I actually got to a point where I wanted to go back home, because I couldn't play. So I had to go to, you know, I had to go to class, but I wasn't allowed to hoop. I wasn't allowed to play. So it was really frustrating. You know what I mean? And, you know, but I stuck it out. Then my opportunity came, got an opportunity to play. And, you know, the season went, like, we had a solid group, man. We had a real solid group. But, you know, what we did, like, we ended up getting in the tournament. It was the Southwest Conference. So we got in the Southwest Conference, and we were the eighth seed in the Southwest Conference. And we went through we beat TCU, who was the number one seed. Then we beat Texas Tech, who was either a 3 or 4 seed. And then we ended up playing Baylor, who Baylor was the second seed. And we ended up beating them by like 30 in the championship game. And went on to play Duke first round, played them at the Hoosier Dome. And yeah, it was a close game. We just couldn't beat them. It was, you know, it was pretty good. Still solid. You know, Tommy Amica, what's the name? Quinn Snyder was on that team. Danny Ferry was on that team. So they had a nice little group.
Yep. That's crazy. Like, to go from that sort of, you know, college station, Texas A&M, the tournament, you end up in, you know, playing CBA and then in the NBL, like Brett Brown and the Giants, you win the title the first year. Like, how did Brett Brown sell you on Australia?
You know what? He didn't even have to. I'm going to tell you the honest truth. Didn't have to sell me. And I'm going to tell you, like, I was playing in the CBA. Like, you know, and they say I played. I was in my fourth year in the CBA. And that's the thing. Like, so you come out of college. I didn't make the NBA. You know, I didn't play nowhere straight out of college. You know, I had to get a job. Like, I'm working at Toys R Us. You know, to support my family. I had three kids at the time, three boys at the time. I had to support them. So I'm working at Toys R Us. And then, you know, I end up getting shot at. And that scared the absolute, you know, bejesus out of me. And so I ended up leaving New York. But I moved to Connecticut with my brother. So I had, you know, my brother was living there because so I had a brother that played that was in the Army. I had a brother that was in the Navy. They was both living in Connecticut at the time. So I ended up moving to Connecticut with them. And Connecticut is only an hour and a half, 2 hours from New York. So I was still, you know, even though I was living in Connecticut, I was going back to New York to see my family and stuff like that. But then, you know, I was hooping. Like, I was playing. I was actually playing on the Navy base and, like, going to play every day. So my brother Andre, who I, you know, owe a debt of gratitude to, he used to pick me up. I used to work. From work, he would pick me up, take me to the gym. I'd be in the gym playing for, like, 2 hours and then go home, eat. And it was like Groundhog Day, man. It was the same thing every day for I swear, it seemed like 2 years. You know what I mean? And then got an opportunity to try out for the CBA and didn't make it. You know, I didn't make a CBA team. It was in Topeka, Kansas. So I didn't make that team. But then the guy wasn't the coach. It might have been somebody. I think it was another guy. He's like an agent. This is funny, man. I got stories for days. This guy was the guy that recruited me. Like, he recruited me to go to Vegas. So I played it was actually called the WBL. It was the World Basketball League. It was a 6'4" and under league. So you had to be 6'4" and under to play in it. And he recruited me to play there. And this was in Vegas. Right. So I ended up going to Vegas first, playing in that league. Then I went to the CBA, played. And then the following year, I did the WBL again, you know, played in the same league again. And as the years was going, it just kept changing. But I kept playing in the CBA. And I don't know. My last season in the CBA, I had a game. This might have been a game that got Brett to recruit me, but he actually wasn't looking at me. Brett was looking at another guy that I played with called Cedric Hunter. And Cedric played in the season. Like, he played in college basketball. He played at Kansas, played in a couple of Final Fours at the University of Kansas. But Brett was looking at him. He wasn't looking at me, but he actually seen me. And, you know, he said, I'm actually looking at the wrong guy. And next thing I know, I get a call. You know, because I was living in a hotel in Sioux Falls. I played in Sioux Falls. I get a call in Sioux Falls, and he goes, been seeing, been watching you. Would you like to come to Australia? And before he even could finish the sentence, you know, I say, yeah. I didn't care. I actually didn't care how much money it was. I didn't care about nothing. I just wanted to go. And another thing that hit me is I knew they took point guards. Because, again, I used Ricky Grace. I knew Ricky Grace was playing down here at the time. And, you know, I knew they took point guards. And I was like, yeah, I want to go. And at the time, I had an agent at the time. And, you know, he hooked it up and organized it. And so the CBA season was, again, like, it was based on, like, the NBA season. But I left. So I think I left the CBA in, like, January. And I went home for I went back to New York for about 10 days to see my kids, you know, see my partner at the time and see my kids before I was on a flight. So I was on a flight to Australia. I still remember I left there February 10th, 1994, got here on February 12th. Been here ever since.
Wow. And then you end up going to North Melbourne and you sort of get there. Were you just like, man, these colors for this team, this is amazing. What a great setup.
Yeah, it was one of those, I didn't even think, because everything I've seen was, you know, it was more the burgundy. I've seen, any pictures, any kind of, you know, books they sent me or you know, pamphlets they sent me had the burgundy and yellow colors.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm my Texas A&M was burgundy, but we was burgundy and white, you know, maroon and white. So it's pretty much the same colors. But my first trip I got here, they put me in a hotel. The next morning I was on a 4-hour, 3-hour drive to Warrnambool. So Brett came and picked me up. And I think it was Warrnambool. Yeah, we went to Warrnambool. So my first trip in Australia was to Warrnambool. So we went to Warrnambool for a week and did like a team bonding kind of thing. Stayed in the army barracks and, you know, got to meet all the players and hang out for a week. And, you know, the first training session, we doing two ball dribbling. And I'm like, I ain't never done two ball dribbling. And people are like, he can't even play. You know, people thinking I can't play because I couldn't dribble with two balls. But then once we started playing, and again, once we started playing, it was pretty much a wrap. That was it. Pretty much, they was like, "Oh, okay, like he actually can hoop." So, and then we did the week, and then that was it. Then we got back. I can't remember. I think we had a preseason game against somebody. I don't remember who it was. At the end of the trip, and then we got back to Melbourne. They had me a place to stay. And again, I didn't even know about that. I don't think I remember. I don't think I can remember the colors until it was time to, like, we did you know, when I was just announced the team and announced the uniform, because we had the best uniforms in the league.
Yep.
That color was the best. And, you know, with the way that, you know, like college basketball, I think Michigan started with the long shorts. Like, we had those and we changed the uniform game, but the colors was easily the best in the league. And it was good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was good.
So yeah, you had the teal, the white, and the even the pinstripes as well, right? It's just a beautiful
purple
strip.
Like, it was teal, white, and purple.
Yep. And you actually win the title that year, right? 1994, you guys win
first year.
Amazing.
First year in, you know what I mean? Again, I go back to my first game playing Perth. You know, Ricky Grace, one of my big rivals. He had a triple double in the first game of the season. People was like, I'm like, no, y'all might have picked the wrong guy here. Like, I'm not the one that should be here. You know what I mean? He played. He actually, like, he was really good. You know, I knew Ricky, but, you know, he was good. He ended up with a triple double, and we ended up losing that game at home. And then, so next game we played Townsville, and I think I had like 17 points, like 15 assists. And then we played, I can't remember who we played, but I had almost like a triple-double or something like that. And then we played Perth again in that fourth game. And, you know, Ricky only finished with two for the game. We played him in Perth, and he only finished with two. And I'm not taking credit for that. We played zone a fair bit, but he didn't have a triple-double, I'll put it like that. But then we left there, and then went to so we left there and went and beat Adelaide. So it was a doomsday double, but people said it wasn't because it was a day in between. But we still beat them both. And I think that was it. That was the start of, you know, North Melbourne is pretty, you know, North Melbourne is pretty good. Because all we did was press. Like, we was 1-2-2 back to a zone. We did that for a whole season. Until Shane lit us up. Shane might have been the only one that actually lit us up, because we was zoning him. But he was shooting from almost half court and finished with like 44 or something like that versus our zone. But we stayed zone the whole year, and we ended up winning the championship. Man. It was, and again, I always use that. And I think that's the reason why I'm still here, you know, that first year.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, like I said, still here.
It's crazy, isn't it?
26 years later.
So after that first title, like, the Giants, like, very famously, like, the, what was there, three teams in Melbourne at a time, and eventually there's
four if you count Geelong.
Yeah, Geelong just down the road. And like the Giants, then it sort of turns into what? Victoria, the Titans, so on and so forth. Was that always just kind of weird, sort of not knowing what was going to happen with the team throughout the years? Like, because you're sort of like the one constant all the way through, what, 03? Sort of across the franchise and
all the way, yeah. It was like, you again, because it was one of those situations where, hold up, what do you mean y'all fold? Because not only that, like, I go back to even, like, in 96, right? The North Melbourne Giants almost was going to fold.
Yep.
Right? The team was going to fold. I was in New York at the time, and the team was going to fold. And Brett actually called me. And I might have called him like to find out what's going on. And I just told him, I said, dude, I'm in a situation here where I need to, you know what I mean? I just got custody of my children. I need to bring them with me. You know what I mean? And he was like, oh, really? It was one of those, you know, we might not have a season, but we might. You know what I mean? And then
Jesus.
I told him about my children. And then he said, you know what? I'll give you a call. I'll call you back in 30 minutes. And he called me back at about 30 minutes. And I had plane tickets. I had everything. All I had to do was get my kids' passports and things like that. And it was already done. And then, you know, I ended up back here. Because new owner came in, it wasn't a lot of money to be made, but I actually didn't care. Like, you know, I brought my kids here. But then for it to happen again, like, you know, 2 years later, you know, you don't know, you know what I mean? You don't know when your next check is coming and things like that. And then I was lucky enough, you know, to stick around, like with Gorge. You know, we did, you know, they had meetings. We knew Gorge was going to be the coach. And my interview, I swear my interview would have lasted about 30 seconds, man. Like, because he interviewed all the ex-players, like all the players. You know, who he was keeping, who he was letting go. And then I walked in and he said, are you in? I said, yeah, I'm in. He said, all right. And that was it.
Awesome.
Like, it was pretty much it. But then he, you know, he asked me about another player, you know, can this player be a backup to you? And I was like, yeah, I think it was David Smith at the time. I said, yeah, I think he can. And that was it. My conversation was done.
Awesome.
And then ended up playing for Gorge, which was, you know, really, it was a good 4 years. I still regret that I never had opportunity to win a championship with him. But it was good, man. You know, you learn different things from different coaches and understand, you know, you understand how they work and you know, what they expect. And it was good. You know, I mean, that 4 years was good, but then it happened again. You know, another fold, and then we come to Victoria Giants. And I end up there. You know what I mean? And that was, and I only did 1 year, you know what I mean? Like, played 1 year. It was a frustrating year, but it was more frustrating because I thought we actually wasn't bad as it seemed. Because I looked at our record, like, it was about 5 or 6 games left in the season, and we was right there. I don't think nobody realized we still had opportunity to make the playoffs. Cause, you know what I mean? At that time, I think they were still taking 8 teams. Well, if I'm not mistaken, maybe, maybe not, but we still had opportunity to make the playoffs, but we just didn't. Like, we just, it was one of those, you know, it's just like a season is washed. And then I get this call, we come in, we're gonna release you because we're trying to win a championship in our third and fifth year. Oh, well, we're trying to win a championship, you know, in our third, you know, we're trying to be a championship team in our third, you know, between 3 and 5 years. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then I called Denard Copeland, another good friend of mine. I give him a call. I go, what's going on? And, you know, I say, yo, I just got waived. You know, I just got cut by by the Victoria Giants. He was like, what? I said, yeah. I said, they just cut me. He said, yo, I'll call you back. He got on the phone. He called Seamus McPeak, right? Seamus called me in about 5 minutes. He said, yo, come to Melbourne. We'll sign you, blah, blah, blah. And that's how I ended up with the Melbourne Tigers.
Amazing. And you win 2 titles with the Tigers. I get to see you again play for the Tigers. So I grew up in Ballarat. So I only ever got to see 2 NBL games, and you were in both. So you played for the North Melbourne Giants, I think it was in 96, and then again for the Tigers in about 04, 05.
Yeah. Oh no, I play with the Titans. I know Titans is one.
Yep.
Because I remember we played. I don't know if you came to the game, but we played Wollongong.
Yep.
Down there, and it's crazy because we both had white uniforms. I don't know if you remember that. Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. And then the other time it was with the Tigers.
Yep.
So
incredible. And so this is crazy. So you end up winning 2 more titles with the Tigers and with Anstey, basically. So you get what, one two seasons with Gazy and Copeland, and then Anstey wins the finals MVP 06. You guys win the title, then you win it again in 08, which is pretty crazy.
It was. But again, like, they got rid of it, and that's why I was upset with Victoria, because it was one of those, I wanted to stay at Giants.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then you tell, oh, we're going to do it. And then I end up winning a championship in my third and fifth year. So, you know, jokes on those guys. But yeah, no, it was good. Opportunity to play with Copes and Drewy and Bradkey. To be honest, too, you know, a couple of disappointing years because I thought we was pretty good. But we just, you know, we had a championship medal, but not really. Like, we just, I don't know whether we played well enough to win championships. And, you know, then you know, made the playoffs both years, but went out in the first round. Went out first round 1 year and went out the second round the next year. And then, you know, Copes left, Bradkey left, Drewy retired, Al Westover takes over. And like I get, it's funny. That's another interesting one because I was actually going to Wollongong. You know what I mean? Because I was actually coaching our Big V team.
Yep.
And Al, you know, Al wasn't cut like he. I was coaching me and Walter. Me and Walter was coaching our Big V team, Warwick Guinea. And I just get a call out of the blue. Like it's a Thursday night, and I get a call out of the blue from Al Westover. And he go, "Mac, what's up? You know, what's going on?" I said, "All good." You know, I said, you know, I'm just calling, you know, we'll talk about next year, talk about, you know, Tigers next year, talk about the China trip. And I was like, the Tigers? I said, I'm going to Wollongong tomorrow to sign a contract. He was like, what? The phone just got real silent. Like, he didn't know what to say. I said, yeah, I've been talking to Brendan Joyce. And yeah, I'm going up there tomorrow to, you know, have a chat and get something signed. And I was like, really? I said, yeah. Like, I'm going. And he was like, you know what? He said, don't sign nothing. He said, don't sign that. I want you back here. You know what I mean? I want you back with the Tigers. You know, he gave me this rundown, what's going on. You know, Ansley's coming back. You know, we had Rashad Tucker. Dave Thomas was there. So we had a nice little crew. And he said, well, you know, I want you coming back, you know, for next season. And I was like, okay, so I still went on a trip, and then we driving, me and Brendan driving to Wollongong, and I just came out and said, dude, I'm not gonna stick around, man. I'm gonna go back to the Tigers. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, you know what? I kind of figured that. Like, this is what he's like. I kind of figured you'd stay there. And I was like, yeah, but he was still cool with it all. Like, you know, we still did the tour, and they even offered me more money and things like that, and I just end up staying. I end up staying with Melbourne, and then that's what they, you know, won a championship, and, you know, lost to Brisbane the next year, and then finished my career winning a championship.
And you also got to play with your son, right?
Yeah, in the Brisbane series. Yeah, he played like we just the one game. Oh, we played together in Singapore, so it was a tournament in Singapore. We played together in that early on, like before the season even started. That was the 2007 season.
Yep.
We played the game in Singapore, but, you know, in the grand final. So game two of the grand final in Brisbane. It was actually game one. He ended up getting in the game. And yeah, we were on the floor at the same time. And I ended up throwing him alley-oop, and he blew it. You know, just history, man. He just blew it. Perfect pass to him. And he ended up blowing the alley-oop. But yeah, I think it's never been done, not in basketball anyway.
Yeah, until LeBron does it, right? So you're basically the proto LeBron at this point.
Well, yeah, it's kind of, you know what? I reckon it's coming. But you know, they're gonna make a bigger issue out of it because it's LeBron, which is understandable.
Yeah,
but I'm gonna get online and say, yo, it was already done, man. So y'all can't take credit for that. We've done it already.
I love it. All right, let's do a bit of a quick fire, rapid stuff, just about some players and everybody that you sort of played with or against. What was the best team that you played on? What year do you think was the best team that you had?
Best team? Why you got to put me on the spot like this? It's got to be there, but, you know, 94.
Yep.
94 team, and then like 2016. Pretty much the teams I won championships were usually the best teams because we won championships. That's how I look at it.
Nice one. What was your favorite city to beat in a game, or favorite team to actually beat? Rather, I guess, you know, rather than Sydney.
No, it's got to be Adelaide. Maybe I just used to love to play in Adelaide. That's all.
Cool.
Yeah, anytime we beat them, it was always good.
Who was the best player you played with?
Best player I played with, yeah, that's just I played with a lot of good ones, but I got to say the big fella. It's got to be Chris Anstey.
Yep. That's a recurring guest of NBA Australia and friend of the show, Chris Anstey, as well. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's got to be Chris, big fella.
So you also played with a lot of big men as well, right? So a lot of really good ones too. So is Chris the so who's probably 1, 2, 3 out of the best big men you played with? What? Who else was there? Ben Pepper? Did you play with Fisher as well on the Giants, or was he gone by that point?
Nah, I never played with Fish.
Yeah.
And if you go, like, if you, I'm saying, like, it depends on what you consider big men. If you're talking about centers, then it would be, you know, Anstey, and then because I won championship with him, won 2 championships with him, then Bradkey.
Yep.
And then, you know, there's a, I guess there's, you got Larry Sinstock, who I also won a championship with.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That would probably be, I played, again, Brett Wheeler, Ben Pepper. I played with some big guys.
Yeah,
those probably the guys that stand. Again, I'm just basing it on championships.
Nice. Who was the most athletic guy that you played with? The dude who you just like, holy shit, this guy can jump out of the gym.
I don't know, actually. You know what? I don't remember no athlete. Maybe Jamal Mosley.
Ooh, nice one.
Well. Yeah, maybe Jamal. He was athletic. Maybe Jamal. I can't, like, my 94 team, I jump higher than anybody on that team. They were all old. Rashawn Tucker had some, he was more of a 1 foot jumper. DT, Dave Thomas had some ups, but he had some guys with some athletic ability.
Nice.
Chris Jent was another one who had some. He had some surprising ups.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who was the best player you played against?
That's a hard one, man. Like I honestly can't pinpoint it to one person.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But if we go, you know, I don't know. You go position to position. You know, you gotta go Andrew Gaze. You know, like I can go. It's just a list, man.
Yep.
Of people I played. You know, Andrew Gaze, Lenard Copeland. You know, with Melbourne, Ricky Grace, easily Derek Rucker. You know, Darnell Meade, C.J. Bruton. There's so many. There's so many names in there that I can pinpoint. I just can't pick out. I honestly can't pick out just one person.
You also played so long that you played against everybody. So that
checks
out.
Another thing. Yeah. So I've been around. So I've been through, you know, some of the guys are still here and some of the new guys that's come in. You know what I mean? So it's hard to pick one player.
Was there anybody, like, over the years that you sort of played against where you were like, man, why isn't this guy in the NBA? Like, why is he over here? Like, were there a couple of guys where you're like, dude, this dude should definitely be in the NBA?
There's a few. That's another one. There's a few. Robert Rose is one. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe he wasn't in the NBA. You know what I mean? Look, Coach played in the NBA for a couple of games. Darnell Meade was another one. Kevin Brooks is, you know, those guys play, but, you know, they didn't have longevity there, but they played. You know what I mean? Ricky, again, you know, all the guys you play against, you can just see, you know, this guy belongs there.
Yeah.
But, you know, NBA is always, I think NBA is right place, right time, like one of those situations. But there's a few, man. I can't even remember a lot of names, but I'm just thinking about the guys that stand out that I played against and you know always had battles with, and you go, those guys should definitely be there.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of your game though, I mean, was there anybody in the NBA where you're like, man, I'm better than him? Like, this is shit. Like,
yeah, I actually always thought that.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I might have had an opportunity, like my last or my first year here. You know what I mean? It's crazy though, and I, as much as I hate this story, I hate to talk about this story, but I went home, and I went home during the summer in 1994. Remember they had a little break? I think it was the World Championships.
Yeah.
And I went home for like 10 days. While I was home, I got a call from the Philadelphia 76ers from my agent to go to Philly to try out for just a two day thing, and I didn't go. Like, because that's the first time I've been home. Like, I ain't been home. I ain't seen my children. So I went home. I actually went home just to see my kids. So I didn't even take that 2 days and go. And even to this day, I actually regret it. You know what I mean? Because
yep.
Then I found out, because John Lucas was the head coach at the time.
Yep.
Like he wanted to have a real look at me. You know what I mean? Because he heard I could defend, and you know, maybe because of my size, you know, 6'4", you know, I could defend bigger players. Because he had Dana Barros at the time.
Yeah.
And you know, somebody that can play, you know, play Dana off the ball, and but I can defend bigger players, and I never went. You know what I mean? And I only found that out because it was a story in the sport magazine when I got here about it. Because John Lucas was also a tennis guy.
Yep.
So he was out here. He was out
Australian
here
Open.
Australian Open. And he had a chat to Chris Appleby. And Chris Appleby is the one who told me this story. And I actually couldn't believe it. But I didn't take the opportunity. So, but yeah, like I always, you know, you always look at that. And again, I know the NBA is right place, right time, man. You know what I mean? Everybody, you know, there's a lot of people that can play in it and just don't get the opportunity. And I always, like, always thought, especially as I got older, because I got better as I got older. Also, always thought I could play in the NBA, but it's, you know, it's with the right situation. But I just didn't take the opportunity, man. But it's okay. I'm, you know, I've played professionally for 20-something years, so I'm happy about that.
You're also coached by basically the best coaches in Australian history, which is pretty incredible when you look back at it, right? You got Brett Brown, Gorge, Westover.
The ones that's been voted, yeah.
Like,
so Brian, Gorgian, and Lindsey Gaze, Al Westover, and I even had Mark Wright for a year.
Yep.
And I had Phil Smythe for the national team.
Awesome.
So I got an opportunity to play for all the good ones.
Who was your favorite?
You can't put me on the spot.
You can tell us, D-Mac. It's fine. Yeah, we know.
I can't put you on the spot like that.
We know it's
but
Gorge.
Again, I'm always say Brett.
Nice.
Because he brought me here.
Yep.
Like he gave me an opportunity to come in and play. You know what I mean? And like even to this day, I tell him that. You know, if I see him, I always let him know, dude, man, I couldn't have done this without you, and appreciate you giving me the opportunity. Like you always tell him, he changed my life. You know what I mean? Get an opportunity to come and to live in Australia.
You know? Unreal.
So it's gonna always be Brett, man.
Yeah,
always be Brett, because he gave me that opportunity.
Best feeling: dunking on someone or faking them out of their shoes with a no look pass. Two things you've done plenty of.
Probably dunking on them.
Nice.
Yeah, unless I shake somebody and make them fall.
Yep.
Then it's probably dunking on somebody.
Dig it. Couple more as well. The change of the NBL. Like, I mean, 15 odd seasons worth of stylistic changes in the NBL, especially, you know, throughout the 90s and then into the 2000s, then it, you know, you'd have periods where it'd be a lot quicker, then periods where it'd be really, really physical and hard-nosed. What sort of stood out to you the most? Could you feel it changing at different times where you're like, man, this has gotten a lot harder, or wow, this is like sort of a lot more attuned to my game? Did you sort of notice that when it was happening?
Yeah. So it's gotten, when I realized it was getting better was when they was bringing out imports, and imports was coming off the bench. You know what I mean? So
yep.
you come out here as an import. When I came out here as an import, imports played all the minutes.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, we playing 48 minutes a game, you know, 46 minutes a game. Imports playing all the minutes. As it went, and they started bringing out some of these imports, and the imports wasn't bad, but it's just the Australians gotten so, the Aussies had gotten so much better. You know what I mean? That's when I knew there was a change. So Australians had gotten so much better. You know
cool.
what I mean? That changed the game. And then if you're gonna bring out imports, you know what I mean? Some of them, you know, again, and even now, some imports come off the bench that's playing in the league now. But when you bring out imports then, now you got imports that gotta be able to, you know, they gotta play. Like I'm not paying no guy this money to bring them off the bench.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's where it changed.
Love it. Final quick one. Where do you get a sweet D-Mac North Melbourne Giants jersey? How is this not the greatest selling goddamn jersey in Australian history? This is killing me.
I actually don't know, man. You know, it's funny. I don't know. Peter Fitters. You know, Peter Fitters, he used to do all the jerseys. He always, Anytime I need a jersey, I can go to him and get one. I don't know whether he still make them. I don't know whether he can still make them, but I used to always go to him and get one. You may be able to find one on eBay for about $5. I don't know. I don't know who still sells them.
All right, so what we do on NBA Australia, D-Mac, is we do Yeah Nah every episode. Obviously, we're not daily anymore because of the lockdown and there's no NBA, but, you know, it's been awesome having you on. So we're still going to do Yeah Nah. We'll do these quickly as well. First off the bat with Yeah Nah, did you ever expect Brett Brown to go on to be an NBA coach? Yeah Nah?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
He had it? You just like, yeah, man, this guy always, can coach in the NBA? Yeah.
And then working under Popovich, you know, and I've always thought that opportunity would come, and I said opportunity.
Yep. Next one up, were you super pissed that you kept coming runner up in the MVP voting to Gazy? Yeah, nah.
Yeah. You're definitely like, yeah.
That's hilarious as well. Like, you just see them going, God damn it, why is like Australia's greatest ever player like playing at the exact same time and having his peak years at the same time as me?
Exactly. But the first one, I lost by 1 point. That's the one that killed me.
Brutal. And final Yeah Nah, do you reckon Bryce Cotton should get his citizenship and play for the Boomers at the Olympics? Yes. Next year, Yeah Nah?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. He can go, man. He's a flat-out hooper. He can ball. So, you know, why not have him and, you know, give him opportunity? Like, and I'm saying that because I actually played. Like, I played for the Boomers, and I played. It wasn't a great time. So give somebody else a chance. You know, give him an opportunity to do it.
Love it.
Why not? He can do something. I'm not going to say he can do something with other, a lot of those guys can't because they all NBA players. But, you know, why not give him an opportunity? Bring that guy off the bench and let him just get buckets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why not?
100%. Awesome. All right, D-Mac, this has been amazing. Thanks so much for coming on NBA Australia, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, so I appreciate it heaps.
No, man. Appreciate the call. Thanks, man.
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right. How good was that, D-Mac? Man, he's full of stories and full of wisdom, and that was unreal. So thanks heaps for coming on, D-Mac. That was awesome. I hope you enjoyed that. I really did. All right, we're back next week with all the usual dumbassery, more guests, all that sort of stuff. Should be fun. Make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Facey, IG. We're still doing NBA Australia Never Forgets, which is really good. Get around NBAAustralia.com. Chuck us a rating and review, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, whatever app you use on your Android phone, if you can rate and review. Don't be a fucking coward. Give us 5 stars. Go on. Big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out their new band, Houseats. Their debut album, Running Out of Time, is still out. It's awesome. Also, big thanks to Joshua De Laurentiis, Fascinator, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, iOS, Sex Jedi, Green, and Dozer for all the tunes you heard throughout the show. Give them all a smash on Bandcamp, Facey, Triple J on Earth. Go buy some merch. No one can play gigs at the moment, so if you can afford it, go buy a t-shirt. Yeah, NBA Australia supports Australian bands, so should you. All right. This is fun. Hope you're doing all right. Stay safe. Going to have some more guests next week. And yeah, be good. Look after yourselves, would you? We'll catch you next week, you dickheads. Later, Hosen. Oi, 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 how the fuck are you? It's your old mate Deli over here, just swinging by to give you me latest pop culture review, eh? And I've got to tell you, with all this rain going around, bloody everyone's been asking me for pop culture tips. Oh, Deli, what should I fucking watch? Deli, what should I fucking listen to? Deli, what should I fucking do? The missus yelling at me. And look, I'll tell you what, it's a bit hard to stay on top of all the good shit out there. Because, like, the missus maybe watch them Crowns and shit like that a bunch, and I'm like, fuck. Can I just go, like, wake up the baby and look after her for a bit? Fuck, mate. But anyway, Hobbs and Shaw is out, and that's fucking great. And lots of good telly shows and stuff. I'm like, but, you know, we're all going a bit stir-crazy, mate. But luckily, I've still got my best mate, Dunne, over here. He's been stuck with us in the guest house, haven't you, Dunne?
Oh, yeah, mate.
Oh, but, like, Dunne, all he does is smoke weed and play Call of Duty and shit, not really talk to anyone no more. So, like, I try to get him to watch movies with us and shit, but he just stays in his room, eh? But... yeah. Anyway, nah, he's still my best mate, but anyway. Good job, Donnie. Get healthy, mate. All right, anyway, so look, I know you've all bloody watched it probably already because there's nothing else like to talk about and no one's got anything else to do. But like, this week's reviews of Tiger King with that fucking legend Joe Exotic. Hey, Joe, on you, mate. Look at that fucking haircut. Oh. And look, no spoils or nothing, but like, that was the greatest documentary series I've ever watched. Like, it's fucking gross. It's got everything. Great characters, rivalries, soul patches, mullets, murder, suspense, meth, fucking tigers, blokes being fed by their wives to tigers. I mean, what's not to fucking love, mate? The bloke who was fucking like, what's his name? Scarface? What the fuck? So good. So yeah, look, I smashed out Tiger King like 2 nights and fucking loved every bit of it and watched it all again. And I'm like, if I'm allowed out of the fucking house by Halloween, you know Deli over here is definitely going as Joe Exotic, eh? Just wandering around going, ah, fucking Carol Baskin. Oh, mate, that'd be fucking funny, as eh? And, mate, just say that chick definitely fucking fed her hubby to the Tigers, eh? Like, no spoils or nothing, but she definitely did, yeah. Anyway, so go watch Tiger King on Netflix. It gets about 87 out of 10 Deli ones because we're all bored as fuck and there's nothing else to do, eh? So go get your people drowned that ASAP. And if you haven't, what the fuck are you waiting for? All right, so that's it for me this week. Stay safe and healthy, and I'll be back soon with another pop culture review for you. Until then, later fuckers, Deli out.